Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. January 6, 2020. My thoughts on Twitter the 1st of June 2020. It is precisely the dissemination of the method of unity among the nations of the world, the general movement toward one goal, an explanation of nature and the causes of antisemitism as the moving egoistic force toward the goal of creation that will divide all those who study Kabbalah into two parts. With our unity, we draw the light that reforms, Hasidim, which pours out between us, and we are like in a cloud of mercy. The upper light of Hochma descends in order to advance us, does not enter as a knife, since it clothes into Hasidim, and by equivalence of form reveals the Creator to us. By uniting, we awaken mercy, the light of Hasidim in the world. The light of Hochma, which comes to propel Israel and all of humanity toward correction, enters the light of Hasidim, which we have prepared from below. Hasidim comes from below, and the light of Hochma comes from above. Everything depends on our unity. Baal HaSulam knew what would happen in Germany and tried to save the Jews. They did not allow him to do this and perished. They could not change anything. A certain period of time is allotted for freedom of choice, to make a decision. Once the decision is made, the authority is transferred to the force of correction by way of suffering. Israel is us, those who aspire toward the Creator. Torah is the upper light that directs us and all of humanity around us. The Creator is the force that's revealed in the center of the group, in the center of our efforts. The result of correction is the unity of all creatures and the Creator's revelation in them. While in the middle line, we turn the ship's steering wheel correctly, which must always be aimed at the central point, the unity of me, us, the ten, all of BB, humanity, as one whole. Then the one single force in the world, the Creator, will be revealed in us. To steer the wheel is to strive for the middle line so that all crimes on the left side are covered by love on the right. The middle line will arise in the middle. We do not destroy the left line, those who disagree. We look at how criticism awakens those who agree, helping them to make the right choice. The mankind ship will tilt, first to the left, then to the right. And if with the help of our efforts we manage to turn the steering wheel, this huge ship will go in the right direction. This is what our work is about, to feel responsible and lead the process of correction. In reality, no one can have himself corrected and achieve the goal on his own. But, if we act together, as Arabash and Baal HaSulam advise, a path opens before us. Moving forward, we are thrown to the left, then to the right line. We though must make our progress in the middle line. No one has a patronage from above, but there is a privilege, the opportunity to get involved in the process of correction, to discern all the pros and cons of this process, and to advance consciously, by consent. And consent always comes from disagreement, like the light is revealed from darkness. Inside of our unity, we will clearly reveal the upper force, the Creator. There are only two forces in the world, which must be brought into balance. This balance is what we create in the group by our unity. The method of Kabbalah is very practical and specific, and we can implement it. There are two forces in nature, the positive and the negative. The positive force of unity is concealed, while the negative force of egoism is revealed. If we in the group aspire to unite above egoism's rejection, then the positive force awakens and helps us. That is how we advance toward unity. There is a simple method to attain unity. We awaken the force of unity by connecting among us above our egoism, in spite of it. To the extent of this connection, we reveal the force of unity between us, which is called the Creator, revelation of the upper force. We must study how to reach correction and awaken the whole world to it. The whole world divides into two parts, those who work for idols and those who work for unity. The upper force is unity, unification. Bringing all of nature to complete unity is the upper law of nature. If we don't convince Jews in the world and in Israel to start uniting, there will be harsh, Unprecedented sanctions directed at Israel from all nations, including the USA. In Israel, we will feel like we are under siege. And if we don't unite, we will be thrown out of this land. American Jews are admitting that the problem of anti-Semitism is escalating in a menacing way. The courts, prisons and police in America are standing on their guard. But in the case of anti-Semitism, the government's actions and attempts to extinguish anti-Semitism will have no effect. Because here we are dealing with a law of nature. Anti-Semitism is the sensation in the nations of the world of the need to receive the light through the unity of the Jews. The most vehement anti-Semites are precisely the ones who will join the Jews, as soon as the Jews unite, and the purpose of creation is then revealed. We have already seen such drastic turns in history. The upper forces are organized such that only the nation of Israel, the group gathered by Abraham from all the nations, is coming together again. All the paths are opening up before it. There are no obstacles, the forces of nature are ready to assist it to raise it to the spiritual degrees. And after it, all of humanity will happily unite as well. The law propelling humanity toward unity operates in a harsh and cruel manner. It first of all pressures those who must be the first to lead humanity, the one nation that is obligated to do this work, to become the pathbreakers on this path and lead the whole world along with them. Since the times of the early 16th century, Kabbalists say that we have entered the era of egoism's final correction. The nations of the world are pressuring the nation of Israel. This pressure is intended to obligate us to unite by way of suffering if we do not wish to advance toward the correction on our own, running ahead of their pressure. The Times of Israel published my new article Solidarity March in New York City, From Hatred and Fear to Love and Unity. As fear still ripples throughout the Jewish communities of Muncie, Brooklyn and Jersey City following the recent string of anti-Semitic attacks, today's Solidarity March in New York City, organized by the UF Federation, aims to counter the negative sensation head-on, and bring the Jewish people together proud, united and strong. My students in New York City will also be joining the march. As an act of unity aiming to support all Jews in New York City, it can have a certain positive effect, since unity of any kind acts throughout nature. For instance, if secular and religious Jews walk side by side in a common identification, then it can bring a very brief moment of correspondence with the force of nature, which connects all parts of reality. Such short-lived unity can thus bring a temporary sense of relief from the rising anti-Semitic sentiment. However, marches and demonstrations play no long-term role in preventing anti-Semitism's future rise, and will thus fail to secure a positive future for the Jewish people. For instance, a memorial march followed the Pittsburgh massacre with thousands of attendees. However, despite the march, a continued rise in anti-Semitic incidents in the U.S. followed. The ADL reported a near mirror of 785 reported anti-Semitic incidents in the first 6 months of 2019, which closely mirrored the 780 reported incidents in the same period a year earlier. Also, in New York City alone, anti-Semitic crimes rose 21% in the past year. Thus, as anti-Semitism has been exponentially increasing the past few years, it can be expected to continue increasing regardless of any marches and demonstrations. Standing together in a march of solidarity is an admirable act, but if the Jewish people want to solve anti-Semitism at its root, they need to also sit down and learn together. Learning in groups has been part and parcel of what made us Jewish to begin with. It dates all the way back to when we learned how to unite according to the commandment, love your neighbor as yourself, under Abraham's guidance some 3,800 years ago. Marches, on the other hand, have never been a Jewish activity. Therefore, while we are in solidarity with the Jewish people of New York City today, we should still recognize that unifying in order to say no to hate and no to fear, as mentioned in the march's promotion, is far from the kind of unity that made us a Jewish people to begin with. The essence of our unity is not reactionary to hatred that rises against us, but that we positively connect with a common intention to equalize ourselves with the laws of nature. This is why we received the name, the people of Israel, under Abraham's guidance, Israel stemming from the words, straight to the upper force, Yasharakel, that is, a common intention to love and bestow, as is the quality of the upper force. Therefore, I hope that we will realize the immense potential we hold, to learn our important role in the world, and not wait for more acts of hatred and fear to momentarily unite us, but that we will take our future into our own hands, implement the method made for uniting us, and become a positive unifying example to the world. We would then have a very good reason to be proud. By doing so, we would uproot anti-Semitism from its root, and witness a complete inversion of the sentiment surrounding us into one of support, encouragement and appreciation. Only with help from above. Each one of the 10 people in the 10 will say something different. Coming to a common prayer is possible only with the help from above. But help from above will not come until we ask. What stops us from asking? We all have one obstacle. Our stony heart does not want to feel any other, it is incapable and unprepared for it. The reason is the Creator Himself, who stands between us and disallows our unity until we ask properly. It is He who interferes with us because He created the evil inclination. Therefore, we need to beg Him, scream, and pray that my son's defeated me will be fulfilled. We already stand right on this threshold. We only need to strike a common blow to convince the Creator. He wants this and waits, but He tolerates and restrains us, suffering more than we do. It is necessary to think over this attack, as if during war, to mobilize all means and forces for this request, to constantly cry, ask, and annoy the Creator without ceasing to feel that it is He who stands in our way and does not let us. You must think about it together 24 hours a day. Suppose we do not feel each other, but we can feel this common point for us, the Creator, who interferes with our union. And everything is achieved only through connection, the beginning of the soul is there. This is called breaking through the maxim. The Creator stands on the border of the spiritual world, and we need to convince Him to let us in. He is not our enemy, but only insists on this condition, connection, unity, and mutual support. It is necessary to invest all our time to this effort, pushing our way toward the answer, constantly beating at one point. No one is ready for this work, and the bigger the person, the bigger is his ego. But despite your disappointment, you need to help each other and rise again. We must not think about our failures but about how to awaken the hearts of our friends. Then, there will be no problems. If I take care of sick friends, I will forget about my own illness, like a mother caring for a sick baby. So, I will recover quickly. The Creator does not hear one person but at least two, and even then, only under special conditions. But He will certainly hear the 10 if it addresses Him as one person. In the spiritual world, a single unit is 10 united as one. We all speak different words, even in different languages, but the essence of our request is the same. We ask the Creator for one thing, connection. First of all, we want to connect, and from our unity, we will already understand what we need. What do we then want? We then want even bigger and stronger connection. And so it is every time. More and more, nothing but this. This must all be done by the Creator. He who makes peace above will make peace upon us and upon all Israel. To turn to the Creator means to imagine that you are under a sphere that covers you and determines everything. Then I turn to this desire, to the power of this sphere that organizes and controls our entire life, to the final finest detail, to the smallest molecule in my body. I ask this force to bring my life in line with this sphere in order to exist in harmony with it. From the second part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, the 24th of December 2019, Writings of Rabash, What to Look for in the Assembly of Friends. In the middle of the battlefield, between the forces of good and evil, the war between the Hasmoneans and the Greeks is an internal war in a person who discovers that he consists of two opposing forces that must be constantly held against each other. The problem is that we surrender to the negative forces, to our egoism, since it is more convenient for us to please it than to fight with it all the time. As a result, a person understands that there is no way out and that he must turn to the Creator to fight for him because he himself is unable to fight with his evil inclination, which also comes from the Creator. An action against egoistic forces is the appeal to the Creator in which a person, with his egoism, wages a war against the Greeks toward complete victory. This war does not end until a person wins and reaches the light. Let this be a little light in the vessel of Beena, but this is already the beginning of the revelation of the soul. First of all, we must reveal that we are in danger and cannot escape from the power of our egoism, which does not let us turn to the Creator. This whole war is only for turning to the Creator, whom we ask for the strength to unite. The success of the war is measured by this only. This is how we advance until we win. The egoism does not let us turn to the Creator through the ten, but does not prevent us from turning to Him personally. The whole world appeals to the Creator because this is a klipa, opposite to spirituality. The Creator can be revealed only through the ten, and if the appeal is not through the ten, then it is not to the Creator. The power of the appeal to the Creator is the power of the Maccabees, the power of the ten. First of all, we must unite and create one common force, perhaps small yet a precise one, which will deliver success. You can become a hero through quantity and quality. Those who are disconnected are strong in numbers. And those who are united as one person possess the power of quality. The main thing is to get an opportunity to turn to the Creator because this whole war is aimed at revealing the one standing before us and achieving similarity to Him. Unity is not the end goal but the means of revealing the higher power that once created this unity and then broke it. The Hanukkah song "The Mighty Rock of My Salvation" says, "The Greeks attacked us in the days of the Hasmoneans and broke through the wall of that hour." This means that we must reach a certain level of connection, build that hour. And then we will feel how the Greeks attack us, break through the walls of our fortress, meaning, egoism attacks trying to break through our thoughts, desires, and destroy us. If in our ten we want the greatness of the Creator to enter into our whole being, affecting us as if we actually see Him and feel Him, then we attract the returning light that builds this feeling within us. Thus, we are already behind the fortress wall. And then the Greeks appear, wanting to break through the walls of our tower, meaning, these are all kinds of extraneous thoughts from all directions trying to break through our faith above reason. Faith above reason, because inside my reason I do not see or feel anything. I received a backlight from above that keeps me in the air like a magnet holds a piece of metal. Thanks to this, I am in the tower behind the wall. This tower and the wall were built for me by the upper light, so, I depend on it. In order to make me even more dependent upon the upper light and demand even more strongly, the Creator reveals in me faults called the Greeks. And I must ask Him and demand that He again performs a miracle and lets me stand against them. Of course, I do not have the strength, and if the Creator does not perform a miracle, I will certainly fall. Therefore, I have nothing to hope for except for the Creator. Everything works according to one system. The Creator does something bad, I ask Him to correct this evil, and He does good. And so it happens at every step. Every time the same story occurs. We must finally understand how this happens and what needs to be done today, how to turn to the Creator asking for the power of faith above reason in order to advance with it. The Creator builds a wall, and He sends the Greeks to destroy it. The Creator operates everywhere, and we are in the middle of this battlefield, between the powers of good and evil in order to combine them both within. Then we, As beings created by the force opposite to the Creator and having received a form similar to the Creator, become one with Him. We must ask for faith above reason because this is the wall behind which we can hide. And the tower is the greatness of the Creator built inside the wall, the faith above reason higher than our reason and feelings, only thanks to the prayers to the Creator and His actions. We only need to cry out together. If we ask together, we will certainly succeed. Therefore, we need to bring together our knowledge, prayers, aspirations, and desires, in order to understand exactly what we want. Everyone should separate as much as possible from their own eye and take care of the tower and the wall, that is, the greatness of the Creator which is inside faith above reason. From the third part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, the 24th of December 2019, Hanukkah. New Life Number 1124. Mental Resilience.
Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitza Mazoz. Hello. And today we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about mental strength, that inner strength that allows a person to deal with different crises in life. Be with us. It's going to be really interesting. Nitza, please. Yeah. Today we'd like to talk about mental strength because it's something really important for all of us. Whether you're an adult, a child, or a teenager, mental strength, in its simple psychological definition, it's a person's durability, his ability to deal in a positive way with changing circumstances. How quickly does he adapt to these new circumstances, states? How does he deal with crises, with states of instability? How quickly can he get himself back together and get back on track? But the questions that I'd like to ask you aren't from the psychological perspective, but from the perspective of the wisdom of Kabbalah. What does it have to say about this concept that's so important to all of us? So the question is, how do you see the inner mental strength that exists in a person? A person has to understand that he's like a flower of the field that moves from place to place, that doesn't determine anything, but it depends on the wind that blows and anything that comes its way. Maybe a cow will eat it at a moment, and so on. And this is how a person is. He's in the hands of the forces of nature. So how can he promise that he will have the necessary resilience against all the changing things, that he'll both have inner and external stability? This is on condition that he holds on to the upper force that controls his entire life, like onto an anchor. And this is called adhesion with the upper force, with the Creator. That the more he devotes himself to this force, to the upper root, by that, he more and more promises that he will have the necessary resilience to face whatever comes his way. Now, how is it expressed? Because at the moment it seems unclear, unrealistic, but I put this as the foundation. Now, in our life, it's expressed in that a person has to arrange an environment for himself, that precisely by this environment, he arranges his connection with the upper force. That if he takes people, according to the wisdom of Kabbalah, these are 10 people including him, And if they get organized amongst them, that in the good, nice connection between them, where they support, help each other, take each other into consideration, that by their connection, they really plan to reach a deep, profound, inner, tightly connected, closed between them connection, and then in this connection, they want to reach the feeling of the upper root that controls all of them. And then when they support one another, they don't forget about this goal. They're directed, aimed at this goal. And so they actually form, shape this upper force that exists between them. How do they do it? How do they form and shape it? Because each of them is an egoist that's unsure of himself, that wants to promise a more stable future for himself. Each of them supports the others for them to support him because he feels that he himself can't hold himself up, can't support himself. So his salvation is that he supports them, holds them up, forgets about himself, and helps them. Meaning he cares for their resilience and they care for his. Yes, and only this way, each of them can promise that for themselves. It's like being on a raft in a stormy sea. And then only by everyone caring for everyone can they be saved. Otherwise, they have no chance of being saved. But each of them will fall off that raft and the sharks are already waiting for them. What's special in the ability of such a team or 10 people like you described it? First of all, it allows me not to think about myself, first and foremost. So the initial condition in order to build resilience in yourself, don't think about yourself. Right. Think about your friends that you're dependent on. They depend on you, and you depend on them. But this is on condition that you can organize such a group. Yeah, suppose that you can be in this kind of team, group, that this is their goal, to build that resilience, to grab hold of that force of nature. Yeah, this is how Kabbalists build that form. A 10, or in Hebrew it's called a minyan, a group. And it's written, there's an entire method of how to do it. That then I care for them, so I forget about myself. You as a psychologist understand this. Then I stop thinking about those things that bug me, about my anxieties. I'm directed towards them, towards the others, to care for them, and that's it. And so when I care for them and not for myself, I have more strength. I can see them, look at them, I can think, I can work with my head. I don't go crazy. This is very interesting and very different. I can say that in the world of psychology, once a person has a lack of inner resilience, then the only solution offered is to use different means like pills, medication, and so on that will make him feel this instability a bit less. And you're offering something completely different. You're saying, stop thinking about yourself, start thinking about others. This will actually build the resilience in you. I see it on women. If a mother has something to care for, her baby, she's all about him. Then she's a hero, she's strong. She's free of thinking of those things that drive her nuts, and she's entirely focused on him. So once a person is focused on another person, this is direction, he gets like these superpowers, mental strength that comes from a different source. Each and every one in the 10 receives the force of the entire 10, and this means that they're a mutual guarantee. Now, this is also interesting because many times also psychology says that if you're a believer, then it gives you strength. But here you didn't talk about faith. You were talking about something else. There is nothing about faith here. I don't believe in faith. I believe in the collective force. Right. So let's try and understand what are the differences. What's the difference between being a believing person, I believe in myself, or I believe in a certain force, and what you have described, which sounds completely different. It is completely different because I believe in the force of society, where together we want to strengthen each other, and by building such a round society, we build it according to the template, the form of the upper force. What do you mean upper force? You said that you're not a believer. True, I'm not a believer. The upper force means the force of bestowal, love, and mutual connection. The Creator, even if we talk in this direction, is called the force of love. And the most basic condition for resembling the Creator, for being in contact with Him, is called love another as yourself. That if we build such a society where you have 10 people that, by the way, in Hebrew are called a minyan. Why? Because it is a complete group. And if they're engaged in wanting to support one another, then in their relationship, in their attitude toward each other, they generate a quality, a force called the Creator. Because the Creator doesn't exist outside of such a group. He doesn't. Why is he called Bore, Creator in Hebrew, consisting of the words Bo'oe, come and see? Because if you create these kinds of conditions, you will be able to feel this force that you have formed between these 10 people. So it's not that a person himself tries to believe in something, but because he's in such a group, in such a team, and they build this connection together, this force, they actually discover this force, they feel it in their connection. And it's truly so. This is called the revelation of the Creator to the created beings. And if a person doesn't believe in the Creator, you don't have to believe. You have to act. You have to create this kind of connection between 10 people that they all support each other in a friendly way, that they all want to be connected with one another. They do it out of helplessness because they understand that otherwise they have no stability. They can have no resilience. Where will it come from? How? But precisely by connecting with one another, and also that they connect with one another, none of them has resilience as a result. None of them knows what's going to happen the next moment and how to be and what to decide. Nothing. Meaning the external circumstances don't change. They're still in uncertainty. Right. But because they want to connect in such a way where each of them supports the others, and these are 10 zeros. So you don't have to have, like, people with super confidence there or something, self-confidence. No, self-confidence, we know that it's all a lie. But if they're willing to connect with one another this way, where each of them supports the others in whatever he can, they as if devote themselves to each other, then between them, they generate such a condition in which the mutual force of bestowal is revealed, the force of mutual support, even possibly the force of mutual love. And that gives them, as a result of this connection between them, the resilience against whatever might come their way. This is the only resilience that we can acquire. Okay, now I want to ask about even what we went through in the past 100 years. You know, sometimes I hear the stories that my grandparents tell me about the things that they went through. Some of them, for example, they immigrated to Israel on their own at a very young age, and they survived on their own. And really, I think about the resilience that they had. And I feel that today we're much more fragile. We're much more, it's harder for us to build our resilience. Why? From a bird's eye view, what did we go through as human beings in the past 100 years? Even, you know, from the days of our grandparents, I'm not talking about hundreds of years ago, they looked much stronger, were much more fragile. It looks as if anything might throw us off track or something. What happened? The thing that happened is that our ego grew, and this is what took apart our resilience. Of course. Because today, with our increased ego, we're in need of greater resilience. So it's like a formula. The more the ego grows, the more man's ego grows, I also have to have greater resilience. To feel that I can realize myself, that I can hold myself up, deal with different things, that I somehow protect myself. But then the result is the complete opposite, because the more my ego grows, the resilience doesn't. Seems that to the contrary. Even if it remains the same, but still, with regard to the growing ego nowadays, I have no strength against it. I have no inner support. What do you mean? That I can somewhat see myself succeeding, that I can take care of myself. In the past, we were more connected to the land, to our home, to the parents, to the grandparents, to something. I had a horse, a few cows, some chicken, different things. Today I'm disconnected from everything. I'm in a state where I have no foundations, nothing to hold on to, right? And so from one state to the next, I'm dependent on everyone. I have no piece of land of my own. I have no household of my own. I have none of those things that a person used to have in the past, that he knew that this mine that soon I'll have vegetables and fruits and meat and milk and that I can somehow get along. I remember that when I was still a child, I knew this person. So suddenly his place of work didn't pay him. So I asked him, so what are you going to do? How are you going to survive? He said, no problem. I have a household. Meaning what? That I have cabbage that I grow and potatoes. I still have two sacks of potatoes and a sack of cabbage left over. Well, a sack is something big. Meaning I won't starve to death. Yeah. I really felt on him that it's not a big deal. Today we're in a state where even though that we have something in the fridge, but we're not connected to the sources. We're not connected to our roots in the ground. And therefore, the government decides something and it influences me in such a way that it really shakes me up. And therefore, precisely in our times, resilience is so important, and we don't have it. Dr. Lakin, can you give us some advice on what's important when I raise my children in order to give them resilience, mental strength? First of all, we have to understand that the more we advance, the less resilience we have. Because can you promise something for yourself? You're in a world that if something happens someplace, it influences you here. That's obvious. I'm not talking on the economic level that if I'll make enough money and I'll buy my child an apartment and I'll be able to give him things, then he'll have resilience. Because we know that economic resilience doesn't yet mean that he'll go through life in the best possible way. So I'm asking emotionally, internally, how do I help my child become strong? Because in a world of uncertainties, that who knows what the tomorrow might bring, and it will bring something, how can I help my child have this resilience, this inner strength, that no matter what happens in life, he'll be able to deal with it? Only the environment. So what do I have to teach my child? Only to find an environment that, in his connection with them, he will build his inner strength, mental strength. Resilience in general, mental strength is only a part of the general resilience. This is something that he builds in his correct connection with the environment. This is what the wisdom of Kabbalah advises us to do. And this is actually the only thing that a person has. And therefore, from one generation to the next, we're becoming more and more open, really naked to different influences. And we're as if becoming more and more artificial in our life, that we're really given to any kind of influence. And therefore, we're left more and more with that principle of building the environment. So the most important thing for me to teach my child is that he has to make sure that in life he will always be surrounded by a group of people, that the connection between them is the thing that will keep him, hold him up. So, trying to understand what am I supposed to teach him, what kind of feeling should I give him, the feeling that never rely on yourself and your abilities and your talents and your money and your brains and everything that you have, but always tie yourself to a group of people that you keep each other in a kind of mutual guarantee. This is the main thing that I have to give him? Yes. Okay, I understand. Now, why is it that specifically in the connection of a group of people, let's call it by the code name of mutual guarantee, because I feel that this is the feeling, the sensation coming from what you're saying, that they hold each other up, keep each other, that even if each of them isn't a great big star, but the connection between them is what creates that safety net. So this is what I want to ask about. Why is it that you hang the resilience of an individual on his connection in mutual guarantee with other people and not different other individual factors, like, for example, inner strength, having faith in yourself, having a good career, having the necessary economic resources? Why are you putting all of your eggs in one basket, which is connecting to other people, and you don't hang a person's resilience or mental strength on himself? Because the general central force of nature is precisely in the connection between people that are equal, where each of them is devoted to the others, rising above his own particular ego, and is integrated in them. This way, we make out of ourselves, build out of ourselves this kind of atmosphere, society, an example in which we suit the general nature, which is entirely integral, global, interconnected in all of its parts, mutually. We suit society to the general nature. And then we begin to feel in our connection between 10 people, as the wisdom of Kabbalah recommends, among these 10 people, we start feeling like in a laboratory, like when you do an experiment, we start feeling additional, special forces there in our connection. The general force of nature, the global integral force of nature, begins to appear there. And we can study it, feel it, draw the resilience from it, confidence, the understanding of our development, the ability to see our tomorrow, everything that you need, meaning that we have built by this, in the 10, a very special instrument that without coming out of it, we can inquire, measure, understand, know, acknowledge, connect to the whole of reality through it. It's like a kind of spacecraft that can bring us anywhere, safely, to the measure to which we're interconnected with one another in it. The principle of creating such a team in which everyone's fully integrally connected, where everyone feels that everyone else is their guarantor. Could this help us also in other fields? For example, business. I have an organization and I build the connection, the relationships between people in that organization in a way that everyone thinks about everyone else, and we create this integrality that you've described. Will they be able to see the tomorrow in a more successful way than some other organization that works the way they do today? This kind of connection, is it something that gives us the ability to see the tomorrow, the resilience, the confidence in all realms of life, in everything? Suddenly, they'll become more successful than everyone else. They'll start seeing the tomorrow. So much so. Yeah? But on condition that each of them rises above his own ego towards the others. So what exactly is this condition? To be devoted to the group, to accept the goal of the group as my own personal goal. To really be devoted. Because what do you mean by being devoted? So it won't be a make-believe, but that it'll... To be devoted, it means that I accept everything that the group wants as my personal, greatest, and actually only goal. And then, on this condition, we are 10 that are as one, we're connected between us, in a connection called love. This kind of connection is called love, and not the corporeal, biological, or hormonal love. And then we're really capable of bringing ourselves to very special states. This was really innovative and interesting. Unfortunately, our time's up. Dr. Lightman, thank you very much. Thank you, Nitsa. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
The Method of Correction, Part 4. How to Fulfill the Law of Nature. Question. Love your neighbor as yourself is the ultimate goal of nature. But there are still preliminary laws, one of which is do not do to others what you do not wish for yourself. What does that mean? Answer. This is not about love but about not doing evil. This is our first law. Remark. Man cannot do this either. If I am an egoist, then by taking care of myself I still cause harm to someone else. It turns out that we are given laws that we cannot comply with from the start. On one hand, it says you must do this, and on the other, you cannot do this because it is against your nature. My comment, if you have any inclinations, aspirations, and desires for this, if from studying Kabbalah you realize that you need it and that this is truly a universal goal, that you cannot get away from it, and you also understand how the entire world has to reach this, then you must seek a way to realize it. However, it can only be done with the help of the upper force, which will give us the ability to act above our nature. Suppose we have a piece of iron in front of us. Earth's gravity pulls it down. If I put a magnet over it, the iron will rise and hang in the air. That is, both forces will be balanced and the piece of iron will be between them. Similarly, If my egoism is placed below and an opposite force is used over it, then I will hang in the air and the egoism will not have power over me, I will be independent of it, somewhere in the middle. If the upper force is so strong that I cleave to it and all my egoism remains below, then I will become a totally righteous person. So, we need to discover this force in order for it to affect us. That is all there is. From CAB TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, the 2nd of July 2019.